This is a presentation of the Trine Broadcasting Network. Learn more at trine.edu.
Hello, I'm James Tu, Assistant Vice President for Content and Communications at Trine University, and this is the Education One podcast. We're speaking with leaders from Education One schools to talk about their schools and about different issues and opportunities within the charter school space. Today, I have Dr. Andrew Hoyt, Dr. Aaron Esper, and Dr. Marilyn Nash, who are all part of the Career Academy Network. Could each of you please introduce yourself, describe your role within the network, and tell us a little bit about your background in education?
I can go first, and thank you so much for having us. My name is Andrew Hoyt, and I'm the head of school at the Portage School of Leaders, which is a high school within the Career Academy Network of Public Schools. And it's situated in the same building as the Future Lab, which Dr. Esper can tell you about in just a second.
Yeah, I'm Aaron Esper. I'm the director of CPE and special projects, which in Career Academy means that I kind of handle whatever needs done in the career and tech ed space and then jump in wherever else I can. I also oversee ELL programming for the district. And Dr. Hoyt and I are sharing the Future Lab building, the Portage School Future Lab building downtown, South Bend, which is opening in a couple weeks here.
Dr. Esper, you threw in a couple acronyms there that people may not be familiar with. Could you describe those a little bit, please?
Sorry, CTE is Career and Technical Education, and ELL is English Language Learner. So those are students who either grew up with their parents speaking primarily a different language or potentially grew up in a different country with that being with a language other than English being predominantly spoken around them.
Okay, thank you. And Dr. Nash?
Hi, I'm Marilyn Nash. I am currently the K-5 Maker Manager here at Success Academy. We are, again, a K-5 building. I coordinate quite a few things. I coordinate the whole class visits into the makerspace, enrichment groups, special ed groups, EL, or the English Language Learner groups. I have several clubs. We have the Little Einstein Club, which is a science-based class, and then also a DICE, which is Design, Innovate, Create, and Experience Club. That one, we look at more of the technology piece. I am also the FLL, or the First Lego League coach for the robotics team here. So there's a lot going on. I mentor teachers and provide PD for teachers, so it's pretty busy, but I love it.
So today I'm also joined by Amanda Webb, who's a staff member at Education One, Trine's Charter School Authorizer. Amanda, can you describe a little bit of what your role is there?
Yes, hello. My name is Amanda Webb, and I am the Academic Support Specialist at Education One at Trine University. So primarily I work with the Accountability Office and all things monitoring and oversight for our schools and our portfolio.
And you mentioned a makerspace. Can you maybe describe your makerspace a little bit? I know they're a fairly common thing in a lot of libraries, and we have one at Trine University as well, but maybe just describe what is in your makerspace, what your capabilities are.
Mm-hmm. Sure, I can do a kind of a verbal walk around. We have six different 3D PRUSA printers. We have two different lasers that the student and staff can use. We have a CNC. We have a mold maker. We have a hydroponic garden. We have AR goggles for a whole class experience. We have an AR sandbox, altered reality, augmented reality, sandbox that has 30 different programs. I think at one point I was trying to see how many different activities and things that students can be a part of in here, and I have counted at least over 3,000. So there's a lot to be doing in here, and it's a big place to make and do and experience and have your hesitancies turn into confidence. Pretty exciting here.
Okay.
And can you speak a little to how each building has a makerspace and just how those build on one another?
Dr. Stewart, you also jump in if I'm not describing them correctly.
No, you're fine.
Okay. All right. At our middle school and high school, which is the Career Academy, they'll have printers and the lasers, and the students really, their schedule is different, whereas the hours that are open are posted and classes can sign up and come in and work on the projects there. So it's always experiential learning, always hands-on. And then over at SABGC, which is our Boys and Girls School, that just opened up this fall, also K-5. They have a smaller makerspace, but again, it's filled with printers and lasers. And I know my makerspace, as well as her name is Lucinda Reese, who is managing the makerspace. We both have what's called a geek cart, which always makes me smile, but it's full of all kinds of gears and tools. And for example, I had a group of students who worked with all the pieces and the tools. No one got hurt, which I was very proud of. but they made groupers and grabbers, I guess, whichever you want to call it, and learned all kinds of dynamics of the what goes into making a gripper that moves. And then at PSLL and the PT Lab, takes everything kind of to a new level. And I'm not real sure all the things they have, so that might be where Dr. Esper could jump in. Or
yes, absolutely. So the entire vision of these spaces, which has, shout out to the IDOE, been funded largely through a very large grant, the Explore, Experience, Engage grant, or 3E grant, through the state. And that grant has allowed us to really kind of vertically articulate, if I want my child or a student to be able to graduate high school knowing how to run a CNC machine, so something they would use for precision machining to make very specific parts with very high, very low tolerance margins, then what do they need to know as a 10th grader? What do they need to know as an 8th grader? And then all the way down to kindergarten. So Dr. Nash has, you know, some smaller desktop versions of these that would then, you know, kids might learn how to spell out the alphabet with them, but that teaches them a lot about tool pathing and things like that, mm-hmm. all the way up through then generating actual like mock rocket parts as high schoolers. All of the machinery has been very deliberately backward designed from what do we need in industry and engineering, what do we need in industry for welding or machining, and how do we adapt that backward, and how do we provide those experiences that let students gain the skills that they need to use those to be able to perform successfully when they leave us. And that, so that's what those spaces are set up for.
An example would be, now that Dr. Esper has mentioned a couple of things, for example, I'm finishing up now where all K-5 students have done a project with the Tinkercad or a coding program and have created different 3D models. So everyone will be able to then go on from there. We're going to definitely build those skills and so on. And students have also done things with robots. And I have like four or five different robots here in the makerspace that they are learning to program and so on and so forth. And next quarter, we'll be heading into understanding circuitry. And then I can mention the AR goggles and having that experience as well. So this is kind of a year of tools to learn how to, you know, how all of the things and equipment and things work in the makerspace. So the next year can be very, you know, much more, even more than we are already doing, experience and learning going on.
Tell me a little bit about how the Career Academy Network came about. What started it off and why was it started?
Yeah, so I've been with Career Academy 11 years now. So I came to the network in its second year of existence, and it was really born out of this vision from Mr. Garatoni and Mr. Hart of finding a way to make a better pipeline for students into our local industries. Because as local business leaders, they were seeing students coming out with some persistent and consistent gaps. And this is not isolated in any way to South Bend, but they kind of did one of my favorite things, which is, you know, put your money where your mouth is. And they said, hey, you know, if we see this issue, we've got to be able to fix it. So they got together and they built a wonderful team around themselves and they started a school. And that's kind of where we were born out of. The big idea here is, like, we have that entrepreneurial spirit kind of baked into our DNA. We have always wanted to provide an environment where students can come and have that hands-on experience and learn the skills that are going to make them successful and truly ready for post-secondary, whether it's education or employment, you know, finding ways to help impart those skills. So that was kind of the original vision, and things have kind of mutated from there into what's needed in our area, what gaps can we fill. So in a rough vision, we have about equal number of students who go on to college versus that go immediately into post-secondary. But one of the things that makes us really unique is whether you're going directly into employment or into the work, into college, you have those workforce skills. So last year, thinking about one of our, the girl who graduated third in her class last year, she was our best welder. She was also one of our best machinists. And she also had, I believe, almost 100 dual credits. She also graduated with her associates and then went on to engineering at Purdue. So a lot of our kids are just very well-rounded. They don't necessarily fit in one mold. And that's one of the things we love is they get to break molds.
And you mentioned meeting the needs of area industry. Maybe for those who are listening who are not in the South Bend area, what would be some of those industries that you kind of felt you wanted to gear your students up for?
Absolutely, yeah. So Career Academy is a Perkins district, and what that means is we receive federal funding for aligning directly with our local workforce. And so part of that is we, every couple of years, do what's called a comprehensive local needs assessment and look at how to answer exactly that question. You know, how are we making sure that we're meeting those needs? And that involves engaging with a lot of community stakeholders. But our primary focuses are healthcare, computer science, entrepreneurship, welding, precision machining, and agriculture at the moment. And agriculture is one of our newer ones, with the largest portion of our students diving into welding and healthcare. Oh, I apologize. I almost forgot engineering, which is another very popular one as well.
If I can jump in real quick, too, thinking about the community connections, an example here for our K-5 students. Right now, they did this last year, but an example with our second grade students, Elkhart, which is 20, 30 minutes to our east, South Bend, is the camper RV capital of the world, less than you. And so we have a second grade unit that they do where they look at the history of building campers. They go to the Museum of RVs and so on. They go to the Thor Industries. They build campers out of Legos and cardboard and study national parks. It's probably an 8 to 9 week unit, but the kids get to see that full development of, you know, here's where the history of this industry. We've gone to see the industry, and now we want to create these pieces. So that's just one of many examples I could give you about making connections, even at the K-5 level, and feeding into and supporting, as Dr. Esper and Dr. Hoyt can address, all those pieces at the upper level.
How many schools are within the Career Academy network, and what is the focus for each one?
There are 5 schools now within the network. And 2 of those schools just came online this year. So we started 2 new schools this year. Prior to this year, there was Career Academy High School, Career Academy Middle School, and the Success Academy Elementary School. This year, we added the Success Academy at the Boys and Girls Club. So that's that beautiful acronym, the SABGC, that Dr. Nash mentioned earlier. And we added the Portage School of Leaders, which is a new high school in the network. And as Dr. Nash was alluding to, you know, one of the things that we're doing in the Portage School, and I can speak a little bit about that, and then maybe Dr. Esper and Dr. Nash can talk about the areas of focus in the other schools. One of the things that we're doing at the Portage School is kind of standing on the shoulders of giants of this first decade or so of the Career Academy network of public schools and saying, we've had this incredible success helping students to learn durable skills that are important for industry and for college and connect them with the world beyond school, and giving them opportunities to weld and use precision machining equipment and be in engineering classes where they are really creating and producing objects that have enduring value, that are really useful, where they can see their competencies and skills becoming a reality. And, you know, we see that as an opportunity to learn about what the high school experience can really be like. And so at the Portage School of Leaders, we're trying to learn from that and taking that into the academic arena and saying, how can we build out a competency-based model of education where students are focusing on interdisciplinary skills that are really durable skills that are going to help them no matter where they go. And they do that while they're also learning the important core content of the high school experience. And the other piece of that is really developing a project-based learning approach that allows them to see the connections between the subject areas and to make meaningful contributions themselves in terms of how they apply that to their own lives or their interests outside of school. So right now, for example, our school is doing a bioethics immersion that's a big interdisciplinary project. The whole school all day is working on some really powerful questions around ethics and medicine and biology. Should we reanimate woolly mammoths if we have the scientific capacity to do so? What kind of an ethical decision is that? And they're using math, they're using history, they're using English, they're using science in order to make those arguments. But they're also demonstrating their capacity to use some key competencies that we've identified as a school. You know, in many ways that you have to actually have a product at the end of that. You've got to make a case, you give a presentation, you provide some materials and some charts that we're developing. And that's something that's maybe a really authentic approach to assessment and to the learning experience for students. And it maybe questions a lot of what the last week of the semester should look like in high school. And we think we learned that from what Career Academy has done with the CTE programs and with their real engagement with meaningful work and connection to real life for students. But I think that's something that we do. We engage in experiential learning across our network and try to develop learning experiences that are really impactful and powerful and have a sense of meaning for students. So I would say I could say more about what the Porter School is really about, but I think the key thing is we're trying to extend our learning into questioning more things about the grammar of the academic school day for high school and how we can really reimagine that as well.
Yes, I think Dr. Hoyt has really touched on a lot of things that I know I like to generate, create, provide an opportunity for our students in that I want them to experience that creativity and the collaboration and really become critical thinkers, as Dr. Hoyt was mentioning, so that they understand that you can ask questions and have that let's try kind of attitude and persevere through when they have trials. In fact, I have a whole long list of examples I could share with students who I know in the regular classroom have learning and behavior challenges and often have staff that are with them throughout the day. And I have seen countless times when they've come into the makerspace, and because it's that student-centered, engaging kind of activities, hands-on learning, I see those difficulties melt away, that they are given that safe space to really, you know, think about how do I invent something, how engage their curiosity into what they're doing. So I feel quite humbled and honored to be a part of those learning experiences for students.
What is the mission of the Career Academy Network?
If you want to talk like the official mission and vision, it lines up exactly with what we've kind of said. Our goal is to foster authentic project-based learning in a real-world, connected, and engaging way where we can continually develop students through rigorous education that challenges them, but is also inclusive, and where we can really work with them on cultivating comprehensive skill-based standards that they take into that workplace. But we also want to be conscious to nurture relationships with them that are compassionate and respectful, that translate into those appropriate social and emotional skills we know they're going to need to be successful.
How do each of the schools within the Career Academy Network provide innovative education to students?
Each one kind of has its own niche, and I know that you know, Dr. Hoyt and Dr. Nash shared a little bit of theirs, but like the easiest example to point at is SAVGC. So that's our connected school with Boys and Girls Club, where we really saw this overlap with them because we are one of their largest sites and we have been for several years. And they obviously are a youth-focused organization just like we are. And so we found ourselves kind of commiserating on a lot of the same distressing points for our children. And so rather than just let it stop at commiseration, we got together and said, okay, well, what can we actually do about this? How can we do something different? And so they bring a very unique blend of serving youth compared to us. And so what we were able to establish there is a place where you get all of the normal before and after Boys and Girls Club services, but you also get some of those same reports rolled into your school day with those same teachers. So we're not seeing this compartmentalization of care. We're seeing a cohesive vision for our elementary students. And Career Academy, we really try and look at what is traditional education, you know, what are those positive elements that we can take? And then we obviously want to keep those, but then a phrase that we've started using in leadership is fail fast. You know, where can we try something new, fail fast, and learn from it so that we can try something new again and hopefully not fail moving forward? So that's one of those really big things that we've been trying to do is take traditional school and say, what if? What if we took this element that other people have done and we tweaked it? Or what if we take this and say, you know what, we're not sure if this is going to fit really our students. So what happens if we set it aside and tried something else instead? And that's let us really be responsive to the needs of our kids and provide them a much more holistic approach to education.
And for me, the very definition of innovation is to create something new. And I think that's definitely something I see here at Success when the students are, again, coming in and they're critical thinkers and they're building and they're learning how to be flexible and adapt to situations, solve, as Dr. Esper and Dr. Hoyt have mentioned, real-world problems. So it's been pretty exciting. I just finished a project with a group where they were creating Braille Legos. And while those are on the market, the Braille letters are on the top and numbers are on the top and are used primarily for words and number work, math work. Whereas the students I was working with decided to engineer a Lego where the letters, Braille letters, are on the side, that you could stack them and make art projects. So that's been pretty exciting to see them, again, an example of them persevering and, you know, applying their skills and inventing things.
One of the things I love about what Dr. Nash just shared is that it's the students doing the innovating there, right?
Yeah.
And I think that one of the things that our network does so powerfully is we think about innovation as one of our core values, is to embrace entrepreneurship and innovation. But that doesn't mean that we're doing innovative things all the time. It means we have free space for students to innovate and to be creative and to use design thinking and to ideate and to, honestly, to make contributions of their own to what we know about the world and how things might be done. Whether that's building a robot on the robotics team or having the opportunity to explore within the academic day to make meaningful contributions to knowledge. It's the students who are able to innovate as well. But like, that's a really important skill for their life ahead, is that they need to be able to innovate.
That's right. That's right. And that example of the Braille Legos the group of students are working on, they actually sent a letter and pictures of their work to the Lego company, who was very excited about the project. And the last correspondence was they were sending all the information and pictures to the design team. So the kids are so excited. It's like, really? Someone really wants to hear what we're doing? So it's, again, it goes kind of back, loop around to those real world connections.
I think it does. And the, you know, there's a piece of the Portage School that I think is one of our innovations that we're working on there is, like Dr. Esper described, the Portage School has a Boys and Girls Club embedded next door to the Portage School and to the Future Lab. So housed in the same facility in downtown South Bend is this incredible Future Lab, some amazing makerspaces, unbelievable industrial equipment and opportunity to get job training and industry training and to make real objects and products. A new high school that serves the downtown area with an innovative competency-based model. And a Boys and Girls Club for teenagers that is just for high school students, where they can stay after school and have that same continuum of care and belonging and community as the Success Academy at the Boys and Girls Club. And that's, you know, the notion of making those connections and being connected to the community is a piece that's really important to that new high school setting downtown, a place where high school students can belong and be connected in these important ways.
You mentioned something about a future lab. Could you describe what that is for those who may not be familiar?
Yeah, sorry. So Future Lab is was kind of our branding for the high-end makerspace that we have in the in that shared facility downtown, where you've got Portage and the Boys and Girls and then Future Lab being the other piece. And we called it that because a lot of the technology there is things that is really pushing the envelope both within like industry spheres, and it's also meeting the needs of our students moving into the future. And what I mean by that is, for instance, in that room, we will have a metal 3D printer. Last I knew, we were the only high school in the country with a metal 3D printer. And this is a technology that we've been able to already work with certain industry partners and say, hey, you know, this isn't something that you maybe have right now, but, and you primarily use subtractive technology, meaning you're taking a bar of like iron and you're whittling it down to the shape that you want. But, you know, you can, there are some efficiency and pieces of instead building up from nothing to that part. And so we're training our kids on those things. We're, that space also has in this area. So Haas is a major provider for, industrial CNC machines. And so in this space, we have brand new equipment from Haas. And again, we were trying to have that lens of what's the future going to be. So most of the industry in this area, when they're making a part, they're rotating that part in just three dimensions in order to make sure that they're getting all of the right cuts and make it the right shapes and pieces. But there has been a push more and more to using five axes of motion to manufacture these different parts. And so we kind of said, okay, well, rather than just getting what the standard is, let's push to what the most advanced in the area is. And so hence we call that Future Lab, because it's preparing our students for the future and exposing them to technologies that are going to be the likely wave in the future.
You've kind of described these different maker spaces that you have, and you've talked of maybe a couple uses of them. What are some other ways that they're utilized to support your students?
K-8 especially, but a lot 9-12 as well, we have a ton of core teachers who have really taken advantage of these makerspaces to take their curriculum and content to that next level of that hands-on project-based experience. So, for instance, we have a history teacher who has students manufacturing their own coins using this area. So they are creating molds and they're designing them, but like that's all based in the idea of what was old coinage, like what made old coinage valuable? Why did people choose to put what they did on there? And like, how can you convey and what does that look like? We've had a lot of teachers do things like our Algebra 2 teacher has them build catapults where they have to then predict where are these things going to fall based on your catapult. So it's a little bit of trial and error. So you're kind of working your science elements in, but then you're also working the math in. And so the kids have that direct application to it. Last we had a showcase about 2 weeks ago, high school and middle school, and then last week for the elementary, but at the middle and high school, so those they sign up to use those maker spaces, and 95% of teachers in the building had done a project in that space where they had taken an existing lesson and come to the facilitator we had there and said, I know this is good, but I want you to help me make it great. And the things that they were able to show at that showcase were just utterly phenomenal.
Can I say one thing I would add to what Dr. Esper is describing? Is that within the Portage School of Leaders and Future Lab building, we have a makers market space where students will be able to sell things that they have created, a space where they can show off their work and even interest people in maybe becoming partners. And we have a number of students who are right now working on their designs for the Trine Innovation Challenge, right? And they are using 3D printers and, I mean, first they're using cardboard and tape, but they're using these incredible resources in order to develop prototypes for real designs that they've created that they're entering into external partners competition. And hopefully you'll see some of those next month.
And at the elementary level, the K-5 level here at Success, I've already had two meetings, I have a couple more on Friday with some of my colleagues who are interested in, again, encouraging the entrepreneurship students. And we've had conversations about possibly having a crochet or knitting group so that they can create those pieces they have ready for the showcase. Or another one is to start a jewelry club where they can make bracelets and all the things that go with that. So it's pretty exciting to see, again, those connections with our students.
What are some of the other unique resources that students have access to at the Career Academy Network schools?
One of the things that Career Academy has always done, at least since my second year anyway, was we trust teachers to be experts in their area. And, you know, we're hiring you to be professionals because you are a professional, right? So you've gone to school, you've gotten this training, you've gone through effectively a practicum that's very intense. And so one thing that the school did very early on that I think has created a very unique resource pool and allows it to continue to expand is we give very large budgets to teachers at their specific grade levels in the several thousands of dollars range for every year. So the reason I mention this is when you have a teacher come in, they can ask the question, what if, and they have the resources to be able to, the financial resources to, if it doesn't exist in district, to go find it and make it happen. For me, it's hard to answer specifically what are some of the unique resources because we're adding to them all the time. And as an educator, when I was in the classroom full time, I was never told no if I could provide a rationale, even if it was beyond my budget, for getting that resource, which I think is a pretty exceptional statement to be able to make for any, you know, network of schools in general.
I agree. And I think I was going to say, I wonder if you'd agree, Dr. Nash, that our people are an incredible resource. We have an unbelievable teachers and faculty and staff here within the community.
I was going to jump in with an example of something unique, and then you both addressed the piece about almost the answer to the question of what do I enjoy about being here. The one example that came to my mind was we have an outdoor living environment at Career. I don't know how many acres, but it's a lot. Where there's trails and water and animals and a wide variety of plants and trees and so on. There's all kinds of things for animals in that area. They have an area where there's some chickens, last I knew. So when we have students, for example, we have a first grade group. They like to do a unit on hydroponic gardening and plants, and they'll go up there, which is a nice resource, to see, you know, our own outdoor living environment. So I wanted to put in a good word for that because it's an incredible resource. But again, as Dr. Hoyt and Dr. Esper were mentioning, and again, it might be answering the, I'll just jump in saying, what do I enjoy most? It's the fact that, like they were saying, if I have an idea and I can explain why this is a good idea, I mean, I can't get things going fast enough. It's just such an incredible experience for me as an educator. I've been in education for over 47 years, and this is, I can almost get emotional about this because one of the first times in my life where my ideas are welcomed and encouraged and supported and listened to, and I feel visible and valuable. So, and I hope to share that with our students, that they also have voices. So I just wanted to kind of put those two words and agree with my colleagues.
Yeah, I think that's the kind of entrepreneurial and innovative mindset that, you know, pretty predominant across the district, that's a resource that teachers and students can lean into. When you have an idea, there's a bias toward action here. Let's try that. Let's figure out how we can make it work.
Yep.
And that's a powerful kind of thing.
For sure. And you can see that in our students. I have the example of just recently students who are building medical and emergency vehicles with Legos. And I saw one little boy, I could hear him talk to his friends, he was stepping in the ambulance. And it was probably as tall as he was. And so I went over and I said, how are you doing with that? And he says, well, it's fallen over a couple of times, but I remember what you tell us to do. Just keep trying. So I fixed it. And I said, why is it? Can I ask why you have to call? He says, well, there are times when we need to have a mobile hospital to help more people. And so I'm working on that. And so to hear that kind of innovation and that let's try it, let's keep persevering attitude with these students is pretty phenomenal.
You know, that made me think of the mobile makerspace that we developed with the Boys and Girls Club that Dave Ebersole and Aaron and the Boys and Girls Club helped to develop. But I think one of the other resources that's unique to Career Academy Network of Public Schools are the partnerships that we have with other organizations and with community partners here that really help to make those real experiential opportunities available to students and teachers.
Yeah, could you guys just expand a little on just the mobile makerspace and how that really came about?
We had a lot of great conversations with Boys and Girls Club. And that's one of the things I love about this place is that we don't just lament the issues that we see, we look for solutions. Even if they've been systemic problems that others have struggled to find, you know, solutions to. One of the broader things that we kind of ended up having a conversation about after we had figured out how we wanted to move forward with Boys and Girls Club at Success Academy and how we wanted to move forward with, you know, like our partner facility, Future Lab, Portage School, and the club. One of the questions we said was, okay, well, how can we take this idea and how can we spread it further? Because as much as we would love to affect every student in St. Joseph's County and, you know, the broader surrounding, That's just not practical at our current constraints. But one of the ideas that came up, and credit to Jacqueline Cronk, because I believe she was the original driving force behind it, was, well, what if we take all this cool stuff that we're talking about in these maker spaces, and what if we design it in such a way that we can take it to every school that Boys and Girls Club touches, which is most of them in St. Joseph County. And, you know, that's kind of that first touch point. And so we sat down and we looked around and saw if we could find anything really in the country quite like what we were looking. And surprisingly, the answer was there's really not much like it. So Dave Ebersole deserves all the credit in the world for this. He sat down and he really went through that design process just like we want our kids to do and said, okay, what is it that we're actually going to be able to do in these spaces? What are our constraints? Like, how are we making this work? And he sourced some very durable materials. And then we, as we identified those constraints, he figured out how to overcome them and knock it down. And so, yeah, for next semester and then going forward, the way that'll look is every Boys and Girls Club site will have some time with those materials. And so they'll be able to learn about doing CAD and 3D printers and lasers. And they're going to be able to have things that they can make and take home that really enriches the entire broader educational community, which is ultimately, at the end of the day, what Mr. Garrettoni and Mr. Hartz had in mind was a rising tide can lift all boats. And if we can find a niche that we can be a part of, that will help serve certain groups better, that helps everybody. And so this is kind of another extension of, if we can help provide some additional after-school care that is hitting more kids, that is bringing them new experiences, that is giving them ways to learn skills and achieve, then that's only going to help everybody in the area. And that's really what we want.
I was just going to jump in and say that the RV Mobile Lab has the lasers and the printers and all of those pieces shadow copy what all of the other resources are that we have as well. So it's fully operational. It's amazing.
What equity gaps do your students face?
District-wide, we're Title I. We're all Title I schools, and we're in the process of, you know, proving that we meet those criteria. And so a lot of our kids are routinely coming to us with gaps in their mathematics skills and in their language arts skills. Collectively, we have a very high special populations percentage. So looking at students with plans like 504s or IEPs, individualized education plans for special education, or IOPs, individual learning plans, of between 30 and 40% for most of our schools. And in many cases, those students having an overlap between multiple areas. And there's lots of poverty. We draw primarily from areas that are economically depressed. And so there are lots of equity gaps in the students coming to us. And that's why we're very intentional about, when they come in the door, providing the supports they need to achieve at the same level. Because I'm a big believer of, you know, equity versus equality. You know, equality is I give everyone a step stool, and equity is I'm giving some people a ladder and some people, you know, stand on the ground. So we're giving kids the supports they need to achieve across the board, because a lot of them are coming in with gaps. And our historical students typically, you know, show pretty good growth and are able to close a lot of those gaps at least instructionally. And we do our best to make sure that they find supports to hopefully break cyclical poverty when that is a major constraint holding them back.
You know, one of the equity gaps that I would add to what Dr. Esper shared is that we often see equity gaps when students are behind grade level or have the same equity gaps that we would expect from their demographic background. We also layer onto that equity gaps with the kind of experiences that they have in schools, right? So they might end up using technology for consumption, for remediation, for lessons, rather than for production, for creation, for innovation. So I think one of the ways that we try to address that equity gap is through exactly the kind of entrepreneurship and innovation we've been talking about with you, is to make sure that they have equitable access to those kinds of opportunities. At the Portage School, we think about that in terms of access to agency. giving students a sense of student agency where they have freedom and real responsibility and can make contributions to what our rules are and what our practices are and how we get together each day. We start our day with a breakfast club, we call it, a big meeting where everybody in the school is here and it's led by students, and the students take the first attendance of the day. And those leadership opportunities and opportunities for agency and real responsibility can be a gap that maybe sometimes we don't think about in terms of access to that real freedom and that real sense of agency.
What are some other ways the Career Academy Network schools support their student needs?
Yeah, I think one of the things that's great about the network since I've been here is we are not attached to what's not working. And so I'll use my EL students specifically. So I've been overseeing our English language students for 3 years now, and several times a year I sit down with building principals and say, okay, this is where our kids are performing. These are different metrics. You know, what do we have in district right now that we can use to support them to make sure that they're achieving where they need to be? And what are the things that we need to keep looking at? Like, what resources do we need to bring in for next year? And we've been kind of seeing steady progress as those have been added over the last several years and as we're figuring those things out. But it kind of brings that culture of trying to figure out how to get better. And so the middle school principal, the elementary school principal, Roxanne Bryant, recently came to me and said, hey, I noticed that some of the early metrics that we're looking at for mathematics in third grade are showing that our EL students are starting to lag in some of that instruction. So one of our paras is fully bilingual, and I was able to figure out how the schedule would work for that para to do supplementary math lessons with those students as needed to make sure that they're getting it in native language and in English. And that was a fantastic thing to hear and see. But one of the things that we'll do at the end of the year is we'll make sure, like, did that work? Is it worthwhile to use that? Is there a better way to take that staff member and whether that's still supporting the EL or visiting them somewhere else? So we're not attached to what's not working. We continually are looking at, does the data support what we're doing? And if not, finding a solution to make sure that it takes us that direction.
So could you each share with us why you enjoy working with Career Academy Network and the work that you do for students?
I kind of alluded to it earlier. This is a place in my career where I feel encouraged, supported, visible with ideas, and the colleagues that I work with are amazing. I have a team that Dr. Esther's one of them, and so Dr. Hoyt, that I feel like I can share ideas, and they're welcomed and encouraged, and that's kind of a different kind of a work environment that I mentioned I've been in education for decades, and this is such a refreshing piece. I was ready to retire a year and a half ago, and when this opportunity came up, and it was just that moment of, wait a minute, I can come in and make things and use the word fun and work with great people who, you know, they've seen me cry and, you know, make wrinkled faces, but yet we've laughed and we grow together. It's been amazing.
Yeah, I would echo everything that Dr. Nash shared in terms of a real sense of belonging and shared mission and a sense of optimism about what we can accomplish together. I think the entrepreneurial spirit that really comes from the very top, from our board chair, Mr. Garrettoni, and from our superintendent, a sense of trying new things and tackling these things together, it really permeates the entire district, I think. And for me personally, you know, I came from a nearby school that I had been at for the last 7 or 8 years, and I was really impressed with what was happening within this network and excited to help them try new things and to continue innovating in education. And I think this is a place where you have support and encouragement to be bold and find ways to empower students and really to make a difference and to measure what difference you're making in new and exciting ways, to try new models. You know, this is a place where it feels safe to do those things. And like Dr. Esper said, that we can fail, let's fail fast and figure out how to do the next thing. It doesn't always feel safe to do that on a team. And I think that one of the things I love about this place is that it feels like a safe place to do all of that. And then the last thing that I would say is, you know, you would have heard it in my colleagues here speaking this afternoon. There's a really serious scholarly perspective on our work and what we do that is a major part of the way that this district functions. So we're really looking at data. We're really looking at best practices. We're not just trying to check boxes. We're really trying to see if what we're doing is working and what's best for kids. And that's a beautiful environment to be a part of, too. I love talking about research with my two colleagues on this phone call and thinking about how we can get better based on what we've learned. And so I love that about this place.
Right. And to jump in quick, one of the words that comes to my mind when you're talking the word connectivity, the data and the assessments, whether it's the research, whether it's the innovation piece, it's that building the connectivity with all of us together in the community.
And I agree with them completely, by the way. I came to education. I was actually originally in medical school my first year. And so I came from outside of education. My original background was not in education. And so I think I had a bit of a unique perspective on career as it was developing and on education in general, because I was a 21st century scholar, student, and like education was my pathway out of poverty. It's how I was able to do better for myself than my parents were, and that's exactly what they wanted. Education has always held a very unique spot in my heart, but it's also something that because I'm not as traditionally trained that I have an odd view on. So I need a lot of support those first couple of years in the classroom because there are a lot of pieces of pedagogy and whatnot that you can't just, you know, intuit. You have to develop. But over time, that kind of support gave me the freedom to say, well, what if, and a lot of freedom. And that freedom is one of the things that keeps me at career is I can always go to Mr. Lugville. I can always go to my colleagues and say, hey, what do you guys think about this? And we can have, as Dr. Hoyt put it, a scholarly conversation, and we can look at our data and we can say, let's give it a shot. But there's no, you know, I mentioned at the beginning, my title is director of CTE and special projects. Well, you know, CTE probably makes about 40% of my actual day to day because there are so many other little projects that I've been able to say, hey, I really want to try this. And I'm eternally thankful for the support that I got coming in, which is into education, which is part of the reason that I like being at Career, is I've got the freedom to look for ways to better support our teachers and to provide, you know, those opportunities for them to grow and to support our students so that they can be all, you know, the teachers, the students, you know, other administrators, so we can all be the best versions of ourselves. And you don't always have that freedom everywhere else. You are kind of stuck in a little box and like this is your realm. And if you step outside of it, you don't have that, you don't necessarily have the autonomy to be able to enact change and work with others to do that. So I don't know, those are some of the things that keep me there.
Is there anything else that any of you would like to add that we haven't covered in the previous questions?
I appreciate having time and listening to my colleagues and sharing our wonderful program with you.
I would just give a quick shout out to, you know, Trine. Just because, like, over the years, so I was here prior when Career Academy had a prior authorizer, and the difference between the two is night and day. And I know that at any point, Jeremy can pick up the phone call and call Lindsay, or I can pick up the phone and call Amanda. And if there's anything that anyone at Trine can do to help us, they bend over backward, sometimes turning things around for grants or, you know, just answering questions in a time frame that truly I'm asking is maybe a little unreasonable. And they do it anyway with a smile on their face. And I do think that's one of the things that kind of has helped us like push from that good to great is having support of our local organizations and our authorizer and all those pieces
for sure.
Yeah, I will underscore that excitement and gratitude. You know, there was a moment earlier this year where we're trying a new concept here and trying to innovate at the Porter School of Leaders. And we had developed a couple things in our approach. We developed based on a book by a Harvard sociologist of education named Kajal Mehta and one of his grad students, Sarah Fine, called In Search of Deeper Learning. And we had really drawn straight from that book on a couple of things that we were trying to do. And one of my first meetings with Amanda Webb from Trine, she said, have you read this book, In Search of Learning, by Kajal Mehta? And, you know, she knew exactly what we were doing and where it was coming from, and even the high school that we were looking to as a model. And I think that just speaks to the support and the close attention, not just the willingness to support us in trying new things to help students become the best version of themselves, as Dr. Esper said, but also a real serious commitment to looking for what's best in education and alongside us, you know, trying to innovate and learn. And there's a shared commitment, I think, to lifelong learning at the charter authorizer level that I really appreciate. It helps make us better.
Well, you guys are going to make me cry over here.
I will share a fun little piece that will hopefully make you smile. Last year when we brought the second graders over for a tour, I think every one of them decided to go to Trine when they're older because of the cafeteria and all the food choices they had. So they're all coming to Trine, just to let you know that.
We said endless ice cream. We can put out the whole show, but endless ice cream in the cafeteria will always be a top favorite.
Definitely.
Oh, it was definitely, yes.
All right. Well, thank you all for joining us today. And for our listeners, tune in again to learn more about Education One.
Thanks for listening to this presentation of the Trine Broadcasting Network. Learn more at trine.edu.